A simple phrase has cost humanity more than any war, plague, or natural disaster. This time is different. These four words, uttered with supreme confidence by bankers, politicians, and investors throughout history, have preceded nearly every major financial catastrophe of the past 8 centuries. When housing prices soared in 2016, experts assured us that sophisticated financial instruments had eliminated risk. When Latin American countries borrowed heavily in the 1980s, they believed commodity booms would last forever. When Asian economies thrived in the 1990s, their high savings rates seemed like permanent shields against crisis. Each time, the outcome was devastatingly similar. Collapse, panic, and the bewildered question, how did we not see this coming? The answer lies in a dangerous form of collective amnesia that grips societies during periods of prosperity, convincing us that ancient patterns no longer apply to our modern, enlightened age. Financial euphoria creates a peculiar blindness. During boom times, we develop an extraordinary capacity to dismiss historical parallels as irrelevant. The logic seems compelling. We have better technology, smarter economists, more sophisticated regulatory frameworks. Surely the financial disasters that plagued our grandparents can't touch us now. This isn't mere optimism. It's a syndrome that affects everyone from individual homebuyers to Nobel laureates. Consider Alan Greenspan, the Federal Reserve Chairman who championed financial innovation as a permanent solution to risk, or the countless Wall Street analysts who genuinely believed that complex instruments like collateralized debt obligations had fundamentally transformed finance. These weren't fools. They were intelligent people caught in a cognitive trap that has ensnared humanity for centuries. What makes this syndrome so persistent? It contains enough truth to be seductive. Financial systems do evolve, new instruments emerge, and understanding deepens. But while tools change, human psychology remains constant. We want to believe prosperity reflects wisdom rather than luck, that rising prices validate intelligence rather than signal danger. This vulnerability becomes systemic during credit booms, when entire societies convince themselves traditional warnings no longer apply. Highly leveraged economies sit unknowingly at cliff edges for years, sustained only by collective confidence, until it suddenly evaporates and crisis strikes with shocking speed. Why are banking systems inherently fragile? At their core lies a fundamental mismatch. Banks transform short-term deposits into long-term loans. This creates vulnerability to runs, when depositors collectively demand their money simultaneously. Even healthy banks can collapse. They're forced to sell long-term assets at fire sale prices, turning liquidity problems into solvency crises. When multiple banks face this simultaneously, normally liquid markets freeze precisely when banks need liquidity most. Since 1800, the United Kingdom has experienced 12 banking crises, the United States 13, and France 15. Banking crises strike rich and poor countries with equal ferocity. Banking crises follow a predictable pattern. Capital floods in during booms, inflating asset prices, especially real estate. Housing prices typically surge for several years before crises, then plummet 35-40% over 4 to 6 years. These dynamics mirror each other across advanced and emerging economies. The fiscal aftermath proves most devastating. Government debt soars by an average of 86% within 3 years, not from bailout costs, but from collapsing tax revenues and recession-fighting stimulus. This pattern represents perhaps the most enduring legacy of banking failures. History reveals an uncomfortable truth. Virtually every nation has been a serial defaulter during development. Spain defaulted 13 times, 7 in the 19th century alone. France defaulted 8 times between 1500-1800, with monarchs sometimes executing major creditors during restructurings, a practice termed bloodletting. Serial default appears as a nearly universal rite of passage, typically lasting 1 or 2 centuries before countries graduate to consistent repayment. Why do countries default? Rarely from inability to pay. Most middle-income defaults occur with external debt below 60% of GDP, well before resources run dry. Default is political calculation. Governments weigh domestic austerity against international consequences. When citizens face collapsing living standards to service foreign debts, political pressure becomes overwhelming. This raises a puzzle. If defaults are common, why do creditors keep lending? Countries repay to maintain market access, avoid trade disruptions, protect foreign investment, and preserve international relations. Defaults cluster in international waves, typically decades apart. Five pronounced cycles since 1800 suggest global factors. Commodity prices and interest rates in financial centers drive sovereign debt crises. One groundbreaking discovery: the missing link of domestic public debt. Domestic debt constitutes 2/3 of total public debt. More surprising, over 70 overt domestic debt defaults have occurred since 1800, governments simply refusing to honor obligations to their own citizens. Governments default on domestic debt through forced conversions, principal reductions, and payment suspensions. Why not simply inflate it away? Inflation creates severe banking distortions, making outright repudiation sometimes preferable, especially when debt is short-term or indexed, requiring dangerously high inflation for meaningful reduction. Including domestic debt solves key puzzles. It explains why countries default on external debts at seemingly low thresholds. Domestic debt reveals far worse fiscal distress than previously understood. It also shows why governments choose inflation rates exceeding revenue needs. Significant domestic debt provides powerful inflation incentive. Macroeconomic conditions deteriorate dramatically before domestic defaults. Output declines 8% during the 3 years preceding default, with 4% dropping in the crisis year alone. External defaults see only 1.2% decline. Inflation differences are stark. External defaults average 33% inflation in crisis years, while domestic crises experience 170%. Long before paper currency, rulers engineered defaults through currency debasement, reducing precious metal content while maintaining face value. Henry VIII reduced the pound's silver content by 83% starting in 1542, showing modern inflation differs little from historical debasement. Why do some countries experience financial distress at debt levels others manage easily? The answer lies in debt intolerance, a syndrome where weak institutions make external borrowing more appealing than tough fiscal reforms. This creates a vicious cycle. Eroded market confidence leads to higher interest rates, straining government finances and triggering political resistance to repaying foreign creditors. The evidence is striking. Most emerging market defaults occur at surprisingly low debt levels, over half below 60% of national income. Mexico defaulted in 1982 at 47%, Argentina in 2001 at 50%, Russia in 1998 at just 58%. Japan, by contrast, has maintained debt above 200% without crisis. The 2007-2008 global financial crisis exemplifies the "this time is different" syndrome. Despite warning signs, sophisticated market participants were blindsided. Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan argued that financial innovations like securitization justified higher prices for risky assets. Yet household debt surged from 80% to 130% of personal income between 1993 and 2006, a classic danger signal, alongside massive global imbalances, outsized foreign borrowing, real estate inflation, and slowing output. The unprecedented synchronicity of housing and employment collapses made recovery particularly challenging. Unemployment rose 4 to 7 percentage points in most advanced economies, while world trade volumes fell over 20% in 2009, the largest decline since the Great Depression. European banks held over $1 trillion in U.S. mortgage-backed securities, while many countries ran their own housing bubbles. Iceland's banking system grew to 900% of national output before collapsing. Ireland and Spain saw housing prices double in less than a decade. After 8 centuries of financial folly, can we escape these patterns? The answer is frustratingly mixed. Many countries have graduated from serial sovereign default and high inflation, Austria, France, and Spain now maintain consistent debt service. Yet graduation from banking crises remains elusive. The 2007-2008 crisis proved financial crises aren't obsolete or confined to emerging markets. While institutions improve, human nature remains constant. The "this time is different" syndrome will persist, ensuring financial crises remain an enduring feature of economic life. The question isn't whether another crisis will occur, but when, and whether we'll heed the historical warnings.